This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
A bipartisan group of senators is seeking federal relief for local farmers struggling during the COVID-19 pandemic. That's been led by Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, the top Democrat on the Senate Ag Committee. The group sent a letter to the Department of Ag this week. The senators urged USDA to ensure a portion of the $9.5 billion secured in the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security, or CARES Act, would go to local farmers who sell directly to consumers, schools, institutions, food hubs, regional distribution centers, retail markets, farmers markets, and restaurants. In addition to urging USDA to ensure relief is getting to local farmers, the senators also pressured the department to administer direct payments through the Farm Service Agency in response to the local food industry's projected $1.1 billion loss in revenue. They also asked that in order to be eligible to receive a direct payment, local food producers should derive at least 25% of total farm income from sales that are locally purchased, including food sold directly to consumers. A dairy industry economist says rebalancing production can speed up market recovery for dairy. The National Milk Producers Federation chief economist Peter Villanto says government support for dairy producers is to reduce production in the coming months, and that can speed dairy's recovery from coronavirus-driven price declines. He says a unified collective government action would probably be the best and most effective and speediest way to rebalance supply and demand. The comments were included in an MNNFP podcast released Tuesday. Production balancing is part of the National Milk Producers Federation and International Dairy Foods Association's plan for dairy assistance presented to the Department of Agriculture last week. Current dairy supply exceeds demand by at least 10%, and that could worsen as supplies increase to seasonal peaks and consumers remain under shelter-in-place orders. Normally, milk production goes down during the summer, so those numbers could go higher. The National Milk Producers Federation, along with the IDFA, urge USDA to use as many tools as possible and as quickly as possible to bridge the supply-demand gap as part of their recommendations to the USDA. And as reported in the Grain Report this morning, parts of South America, are particularly the ag areas of Brazil and Argentina, are currently being clobbered by a drought that's threatening to shrink their harvested yields. To make matters worse in South America, the lack of rainfall has been matched by excessive heat. That's according to the U.S. National Centers for Environmental Information. South America has experienced its second warmest December to February period on 110 years of keeping those such records. The lack of rainfall, and in some cases a third less than normal, has been experienced in Brazil's Mato Grosso, Sao Paulo, and Paraná states, as well as northern Argentina. In fact, parts of northern Argentina, which account for much of the nation's grain production, only recorded roughly 40% of its normal rainfall during the month of March, and that's according to an AccuWeather report. Quote, the resulting drought from the lack of rainfall across these crop-heavy regions, in addition to bouts of heat, have stressed corn and soybean crops, and that has led to reduction in their yields. That's according to AccuWeather senior meteorologist Jason Nichols. Moving on to news now back here in the States, U.S. producers are positioned to plant the second largest corn crop in modern history, but you wouldn't notice that if you glanced at fertilizer prices. As producers have updated their 2020 crop budget, low fertilizer prices were a welcome improvement. Fertilizer prices out of Illinois in March of 2020 were significantly lower than in the spring of last year. Anhydrous ammonia prices, for example, are currently around $500 per ton, but were closer to $600 per ton last year. Across the board, lower fertilizer prices have been observed. DAP prices, or diammonium phosphate, has fallen the most. That's down 22%, and all forms of nitrogen fertilizers are at least down 10%. The last time the U.S. planted more than 95 million acres of corn was in 2012 and 2013. That was when fertilizer expenses were nearly $160 per acre. Of course, many factors have changed since then. Expanded U.S. fertilizer production and lower energy prices are being the key things. Furthermore, corn production in 2012 and 13 was being pulled upon by stronger usage and higher prices. Another data set collected in the report by the USDA Illinois report are that farm diesel fuel prices are much lower. In early 2020, farm diesel prices were roughly $2.50 a gallon before sliding to $2.25 a gallon by the end of February. And by the end of last month, in March, the most recent data collected, prices were averaged of $1.74 a gallon. Compared with the spring of last year, reported farm diesel prices are 71 cents per gallon lower, or roughly 27% lower. This will be another improvement on the 2020 crop budget, but also a reflection of the challenges that are currently being faced by the renewable fuel and ethanol industry. And with fieldwork and spring planting getting underway, lower fertilizer prices are that welcome improvement. For a fertilizer application of 180-70-70, lower prices are equating to about 20 cents per acre lower than last year. Furthermore, current prices reflect the lowest fertilizer expenses observed in more than 10 years. Lower fertilizer expenses for corn production have also limited soybeans' appeal for be planted this spring. And also, as I reported in the livestock report, Smithfield Foods is planning to close some pork processing plants, particularly one in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, until further notice, because of employees who have been testing positive for coronavirus. It's just one of several major ag facilities that are temporarily closing their operations due to the pandemic. Virginia-based Smithfield Foods says the closures are a trend that may eventually put a dent in the U.S. meat supply. The closures of this facility, combined with a growing list of other protein plants that have shuttered across the industry, is pushing our country perilously close to the edge in terms of meat supplies, says Smithfield CEO Kenneth Sullivan. It's important to keep our grocery stores stocked, and if our plants aren't up and running, those items in that will be severely won't be able to happen if those plants are closed. Across the entire supply chain, including on livestock producers, the company says their Sioux Falls, South Dakota site employs about 3,700 people that will process about 130 million food servings a week, and it will buy from about 550 independent producers. These farmers won't have anywhere to send their animals, Sullivan adds. Almost 300 employees of the 3,700 at Smithfield in South Dakota have tested positive for the coronavirus, and that accounts for 40% of all cases in South Dakota. And restaurants are turning to selling groceries to stay afloat, and that's a very important link in the American food supply chain, as restaurants sell directly to consumers, and they're looking at temporarily new ways of doing business to stay afloat, as traditional grocers are struggling to keep up with increased demand brought on by COVID-19, restaurants are turning to grocery sales to make their ends meet. ABC News says it's a trend that's catching on across the country as large chains and mom-and-pop establishments look for new income. Panera launched Panera Grocery, also known as the St. Louis Bread Company, and they're not selling only traditional items that Panera restaurants sell, but items like milk, eggs, and fresh produce that its 21 stores would normally use to make meals are also being sold. Sarah Burnett, the vice president of wellness and food policy at Panera, says the decision to sell groceries as a reaction to the unprecedented crisis our country is going through right now. Subway is also selling groceries at only 250 of its stores in five states. That includes California, Connecticut, Oregon, Tennessee, and Washington State. The National Restaurant Association says the industry has lost over 3 million jobs and $25 billion in sales since the 1st of March. A spokeswoman says 3% of restaurants have permanently closed their doors, and they're predicted that another 11% will do so by the end of this month. Moving on now to local ag news from our area. The American Farmland Trust has partnered with the USDA's National Resources Conservation Service to provide over $1.5 million to improve water quality here in Illinois. That cost share money will be split between two waterways here in mid-Illinois, one being the Vermilion Headwaters watershed, which starts around Pontiac in north-central Illinois, and the other half will benefit the Upper Macoupin Creek watershed. Both watersheds are part of the Mississippi River Basin Healthy Watersheds Initiative, and that initiative also supports the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy, with the ultimate goal of improving water quality, restoring wetlands, and enhancing wildlife habitat while ensuring the economic viability of agricultural lands along the nation's largest river. To explain more on this cost-share money and to explain the upcoming deadline is American Farmland's Midwestern Conservation Technician, Sarah Blount.
Yes, so this money is going to be coming from the Mississippi River Basin Initiative, or MRBI, program. This started here in Macoupin County in the Upper Macoupin Creek watershed in 2018. And we got a lot of this funding because this watershed is identified as one of the three highest phosphorus-yielding major watersheds in Illinois. So to achieve those nutrient loss reduction strategy numbers that were outlined in 2015, putting some money into this watershed was definitely necessary.
With being one of those highest in producing all that phosphorus, it's obviously not going to be a month or two process. This is going to be a process where this money is going to be implemented over a course of a few years.
Absolutely, yes. So we started in 2018, and we just got approval for more funding. So this process is going to be drawn out over quite a few years, and those results are going to be drawn out over quite a few years, too. We know that we're not going to see results, even hardly this year, from the work that we've done in 2018. It's going to be on down the road, so it's hard to think about implementing practices that don't give you immediate results. But they are coming. They are definitely coming, so that's something to consider.
And as you said, this has been going on since 2018. About how many acres or just about how many producers have you worked with and been able to implement some of these practices on already?
Yeah, so I think we've worked with around 30 producers with all of our funding so far. Out of the Upper Macoupin Creek watershed, which is about 137,000 acres, we have worked in probably a couple thousand. I started last June, so the acres before that I haven't looked into a whole lot, but I know that we did get a fairly big contract just last year with around 1,000 acres in it.
And with this money, there's 1.5 that's going to be spread upon two different watersheds. We mentioned Macoupin Creek is one. The other one is the Vermilion Headwaters. That starts up around Pontiac, so the northern and eastern part of the state. But of that 1.5, about how much will be utilized for Macoupin County and towards the Illinois River?
Yes. So in Macoupin County and in the Upper Macoupin Creek watershed, we're looking at just over $600,000 for these practices.
Okay. And maybe if you could just kind of do a little overview on what the nutrient loss reduction strategy kind of outlines for the next few years.
Yeah. So our goal here in Illinois from that strategy was to achieve a 25% reduction in total phosphorus loads and a 15% reduction in nitrate loads. And I believe those are the numbers for 2025. So that was kind of our interim goal. That would be 10 years after the original reduction strategy came out in 2015. Most of the latest PowerPoints and things that I have seen show that we're actually going the wrong direction with that. And there's a lot of factors that go into that, like increased rainfall and larger, harder rain events. But our goals are still to try and work toward that 25% reduction in phosphorus and a 15% reduction in nitrate N. So we're hoping.
And you mentioned those hard rain events. 2019 is kind of just ruined all those plans, really. When it did rain, it rained hard, and it always seemed to rain in 2019. So 1 year could kind of just ruin all those plans.
It definitely can. And we are seeing a change in our weather events toward more of those hard, really fast rains. And those are going to change up plans a lot, too. Those weren't as important when the nutrient loss reduction strategy was written in 2015 because they weren't as prominent. As the weather patterns change, and I'm sure everyone has noticed this, you're seeing really hard, fast rains that are causing washes in your fields. and really showing you those problem areas. And those problem areas are what are causing the increase in the phosphorus and nitrate loads.
Okay, and again, we're talking here with Sarah Blount. She is the American Farmland Trust Midwestern Conservation Technician. And Sarah, I'm sure you work all over the Midwest, not just Illinois, with things like this, with cost share. What's maybe one of the big things that you notice maybe here locally, or at least in Illinois, that might be different or kind of unique to the rest of the Midwest?
So here, even just in Macoupin County, in the upper Macoupin Creek watershed, we have an incredible amount of funding for practices to reduce the runoff and reduce your loss of these nutrients that you really want to keep in your fields. There are very few places across the Midwest that have as much funding and as many resources as we do here in the upper Macoupin Creek to get practices implemented and really work toward this nutrient loss reduction strategy. I think people typically think, oh, it's just another program. Nothing is really special about it. But there is so much funding here waiting for producers to come in and apply for it, really.
As you mentioned, that application, of course, there's always deadlines for these applications, and we're approaching that deadline pretty quick here. May 1st is that deadline. Any special way now with social distancing and the COVID-19 pandemic, anything that's changed from the original kind of plans for the way that you were thinking about having the farmers apply for the funding, or is it pretty well just the same way through over the phone or through the internet?
So it is just a little bit different. I know that a lot of farmers are probably used to walking into the NRCS or FSA offices to ask questions or drop off contracts or even pick them up. And that office is not open to the public right now, but you can still get a hold of them by phone. They are still working full time. So calling them by phone is the really only way to get a hold of them right now. You can't get a face-to-face meeting, but if you do need them to come out and survey, they can still do that. You just can't go into the office. The phone is your best bet to get all of that taken care of.
And as we mentioned, too, that number there at the NRCS office in Carlinville, I'm sure a lot of farmers in Macoupin County have it on their speed dial, but just in case somebody needs it again, do you have that number?
I sure do. So their number is 217-854-2626, and extension 3 will get you to the right office.
And again, that was Sarah Blount with the American Farmland Trust. And again, that number there at the NRCS office in Carlinville is 854-2626, extension 3, and the deadline for this cost share money is Friday, May 1st, and it's only eligible to farmers who are in or have acreage in the upper Macoupin Creek watershed. And that'll conclude Ag News here for your Wednesday morning. But remember, if you have any Ag News for us, you can send those items to us at WSMI at WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Wednesday morning, April 15th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.